Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining me today is Dwayne Scott Cerny. Dwayne is a best-selling author, podcast host, and the owner of the famous Broadway Antique Market in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today, Dwayne.
Thank you for having me, Phil.
So let's start with, what does success mean to you, Dwayne?
Well, you know, so many people say, you know, success is when you're doing what you love. And that's just a wonderful, you know, Hallmark card of an idea. but making it happen, that's the ticket. So, you know, the easy answer is I send you that card. But the hard answer is really deciding what it is. What is it that makes you happy? Because lots of things make you happy. But let's be real, you got a mortgage to pay and kids to put to college and expenses and things. So you have to live in the real world. So how do you do both? So my life has really been an adventure in getting to that point.
Yeah. And you've done some amazing things, from, you know, the poetry to the business, all over the place. And so, you know, there's a saying, you can't build confidence without feeling uncomfortable. How do you explain how you do that in respect to your real life examples?
I think, you know, you need to look within and almost say like, okay, what makes me uncomfortable? Because that's what I did. And I would say that I was, like many people, I was just very shy. And that bothered me. And I knew it held me back from so many things. And being a poet, which just is a weird kind of thing that happened, put me into a position where I had to speak, you know, publicly. And that was terrifying. And after college, it was thought, you know, I still have to get through this. It wasn't something you could just flip a switch and make it happen. And then I went to Second City. That was the best thing. And I would put that out there for anybody. That kind of training, even just to take some classes, and it breaks that down. It takes you out of yourself. It really, the simplest answer is you become a kid again, and you play. And that's really one of my favorite words, even to this 63-year-old, is what I'm doing. You can make something play and kind of embrace your inner child. All this stuff comes back. All this stuff comes back. These tools that you had, and I realize that the things that, like in life, that kind of kept you down, you need to follow that path, you need to do this or that. It goes away because kids don't think about that. They're just playing. But then you can direct that play into what you like to do. And that's why I had a record label and a paralegal service, because that was something that, you know, that made money. And I've had a greeting card line, and now I've written a couple books, and one was a bestseller, and I have a very successful antique store, you know. And it's not so much, you know, these things sound like, you know, that this is over, you know, 40 some years, but it's 40 some years of really playing. And I think that's the difference, especially in business. If you could just like kind of bring it down a notch and let's just find your inner kid and like run with that.
Yeah. So how do you find your inner kid, though, if it's something that you've been doing for years? You know, I mean, I get that when I jump into something brand new, I start a new business venture. But over time, 2, 3, 4 years into it and doing the same thing, how do you keep that enthusiasm going?
Well, I'll tell you, and one thing, and this isn't the best advice, this is what I did, is I became successful at something with the record label, and I sold it. I didn't want to do that anymore. It wasn't fun anymore, right? And you know, my accountant said, every time you get a business and start making money, you walk away from it, which was kind of true. It actually was kind of true. So now that's really kind of jumping off the deep end of the pool, but, you know, it's easier said than done. However, you know, people have side gigs all the time. There's so many. I mean, look at actors or comics or whatever. They have real jobs during the week, and then they're going, you know, and doing a trying to be in a play on a weekend as an actor or a stand-up guy doing that. You know, there's things that you can, if you really want to explore that part of yourself, that you do both. You don't sleep. And then through that, something else might open up. And then you know, eventually you may walk away from that job. I mean, we all kind of get into this, that you have to be with this company for, you know, decades. No, you don't. That's what your father and grandfather did. That's not true. You know, people stay in a position for a couple of years and they move on and do something else.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I was on the phone with a buddy of mine. And he says, hey, I got this business thing, opportunity to jump into. It's a lot of money. You know, should I do it? Yes, jump into it. Do it. You know, it's just money, right? But is it going to be something that's going to make you happy? Is it going to be something you love? You know, jump into it. And you're somebody who, when I talk to you about the things you have going on, you constantly talk about finding things you love and jumping into them. Are those things that kind of just stumble into your life, like even the antique shop and things like that? Is it just something that fell into your lap, or is that something that you premeditative thought and went out and said, you know what, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, well, in my case, I always said when I was a kid, you know, my mother never really wanted to let me to play upstairs and make a mess. So go downstairs, and downstairs was all the stuff from their 50s apartment, and you could trash it up as much as you wanted, which I wasn't, but I was like going, oh, this three-piece sectional 50 sofa is so cool, and this brass floor lamp and all this blonde furniture. And I just loved playing down there with the stuff. And honestly, I kind of forgot about that. You know, I go to school, I get a job as an editor in a publishing house. You know, I did the 9 to 5. And then on the weekends, I would start going to flea markets. And I went, oh, what? Yeah, I like this stuff. And I didn't really have any money. I was making 12 grand a year. I didn't have any money. So furnishing my first apartment with things that I thrifted or that I found at flea markets. And I'm going, I love this stuff. Never, this is, again, way before eBay. So I wasn't thinking about making any money at it. And or even that was a market, a real business. I didn't really think that was a real business. So I always say I went into this like knowing nothing. But in that same respect, just for others, and say, like, again, when you were a kid, you know, what was it that made you happy? I mean, maybe you really loved playing an instrument and you just got away from that, right? Maybe you should pick up that instrument again and get in a band, start a band. Now, music now, because of the internet, there's so many things you can do and be creative. I mean, I will say too, it's like, it's not for everybody. Not, I talk to my friends who are creative and those who aren't. And I often say, you know, it's going to sound terrible, but it can be a bit of a burden, because you feel like you're not being true to yourself by not using what the gifts you have. Right. And other people are going like, well, I don't write and I don't do music and I'm not creative and all that. Well, and if you're happy going down that path, that's fine. But we are talking about success and happiness. So, you know, how do you get there?
No, and I think that I think a lot of that stuff is something that can be trained. I often read business books. Like that's like my go-to. I've been doing it for years. I'm a very boring person when it comes to literature. But recently my wife encouraged me to start reading fiction. So I read Stephen King's, what's that book you just wrote? Fairy Tale is what it's called. And a fiction book, kind of outside of the norm of what I would typically read. And I'll tell you, got the creative juices flowing. And something I found is that creativity is linked to all sorts of different things that are applicable to business, but also applicable to memory, you know, and remembering things and stuff like that. When you can visualize and play a movie in your head, you can understand things better. You can remember them better and so on and so forth. So I would say, and I don't know if you feel the same way, that creativity and some of these other things, if you're not great at it, maybe explore that area of your life, because you could be missing something as part of your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we could say, you know, Grandma Moses picking up that paintbrush at 75, or however old she was. You know, there's so many people. And there's this whole thing about a friend of mine wrote a book called This Chair Rocks, Ashton Applewhite. And it's about ageism. ageism and business. And we all have this kind of, you know, perception, you know, in our head, well, gee, you know, 65, 70, you know, you're probably going to retire and all that. Not at all. Not at all. That hasn't been true for a long time, but you know what? It's still in the back of our head that that's what like you're supposed to do. And so there's people that have really kind of, they almost have like a second childhood, but in a really good way, because they've felt like rediscovered a part of themselves that was always there. Reading is a wonderful way to open that up. And almost read. Yeah, I used to teach high school English, another thing I did. I used to say to the kids, just read anything, you know, teenagers, you know, read a Playboy magazine. There's great literature between the pictures, you know, I mean, just read anything. And it could just open up your mind. And the same thing going like, listen to music, just open yourself up to ideas. And it's also a great way to relax. You're just, everybody's also just stressed out. You know, let Stephen King take you away into his world.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I'd add to that. Yep. You know, kind of push your boundaries on the things that you're currently doing and say, hey, is there a way that I could stretch myself and, you know, develop new pathways in my brain by challenging it? You know, there's studies that I think they've even done with, you know, using your left hand more, right, to decrease stroke and some of those things as you get older. And so there's a lot of great benefits to long-term health around that as well. I want to switch topics a little bit. USA Today says Dwayne Scott Cerny can provide you the worst possible news in the best possible way. How do you exactly do that?
First, I find a guy who could put that on my tombstone. That's okay. And, you know, you got to pay by the letter. So
yeah.
I wish they'd said something a little shorter. I think that that came about because being an antique dealer, you have to wear a lot of different hats, and you're a social worker, and you're a rabbi, and you're a priest, and you're a minister, and you're also a person who's dealing with often. You're a grief counselor. You can be thrown into some very, I would say, uncomfortable situations, but you could choose if you're going to be uncomfortable or instead help somebody because you're going, it's not about me. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's come to that phrase came about because I was telling people that thing that they think is worth so much money is not. So that's the common thing. You know, you always, people watch Antique Roadshow and you're seeing the best of the best of all these, as if it happens every day, you know, they don't show a lot of the disappointing reviews because the sponsors don't want to show that. It's not good television. It's not as entertaining, but I have to give people bad news. I give them realistic news. I'm giving them honest news. And I think that's the reason that I've been successful, is that myself and my partner and all the dealers that I have, and I've had some of them for 20 and 30 years, I look for really honest people, and honest and fair, and that works. At the end of the day, the good guy does win. I will say that I always try to balance it with, okay, you know, that wasn't worth what you thought it was, but look what I found over here. And did you realize this does have value? And it could often be something they were going to throw out or they were going to give away. And I'm going, no, the value is actually in this. So I've been in apartments, condos and co-ops where the contents of the apartment or the unit was worth more than the apartment itself.
Wow.
Yeah. And they didn't really know that, you know? So I do give bad news, but I always try to balance it out. And that's why people still talk to me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think honesty, integrity is such an important component nowadays. And we live in a world where it seems like everyone tells these little white lies because they don't want to offend you, or they don't want to, you know, give you an opposing opinion,
right?
Especially nowadays when with social media and the way Google works, it's all an echo chamber, and we get stuck in this world where we don't see
that loop, right?
Yeah, any sort of like diversity or you know, and those sorts of things. So me personally, I try to explore diversity of thought, even if it's not something I specifically believe in. I'll look for an opportunity to challenge my own belief and work outside my comfort zone. Is that something that you do in your world as well?
I'd say it's something I've grown into, is in that I would say when I was younger, I didn't take criticism well at all. And especially when you're self-employed and you're the guy who's running it and has to make the payroll, and you know, you really don't want to hear any dissenting opinions. I've really grown into now asking for it, which freaks people out. Mm-hmm. And I'll go, how can this be better? You know, I'm happy with this, but I'm not, you know, I'm not thrilled. I think this could be better. How can we make this better? How can I make this better? So I'm actually asking for, I'll say criticism. There's nothing wrong with saying it's criticism. You know, and other than the fact, you know, what somebody's going to say, well, you know, I think you're too short. Well, you know, I can't fix that.
Yeah.
but, you know, you can't. I think that's one reason the first book was so successful, is I was constantly asking for that feedback of going, I really want to hit this one out of the park. It's got to be just as perfect as it can be. So I'm not going to be offended when you tell me. And let me tell you, 20 years prior, I would have been, I'm not changing that. This is what it's going to be, you know, for like I knew. That guy was a fool. So just be open to that and don't wear your heart on your sleeve. So get this feedback from people. I mean, most people are going to be decent and give you good feedback. And it also creates just a much better working relationship with your employees or your contractors or whatever. They're going to go, wow, this guy like really wants my opinion. Well, yeah, I'm going to tell him. And you don't have to agree with them necessarily, but nine times out of 10, there'll be a nugget in there. You'll go, that's good.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. Early on in my career, you know, I thought the boss was supposed to have all the answers, right?
Yeah.
And made some bad decisions. And I looked around me, why did you all support me in this? This was a terrible decision, you know? And then found that, you know what, it's probably better to create a culture where people understand that I do make mistakes and do need some direction along the way.
Right.
You know.
I mean, why is it that, and again, we can just talk about, you know, the world in general. Why is it so difficult for somebody to say, I messed up. I'm sorry. I misspoke. I like that phrase. I misspoke. I misjudged. You know. Oops. unless somebody died, you know, let's be honest, we'll get through this, you know, it could be worse. It could be raining. You know, I mean, it's that life. So, you know, like embrace that. It just makes you a better person. And it makes you a person that other people want to, you know, well, I'll say do business with and or be friends, because it's just, it's, you know, it's, we're human. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with it? You mean it's not this notion that we won't name any names, but it just seems like this, especially in the political realm, you know, everybody's just now won't take responsibility for anything. That's just not good.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. I think that, you know, it's something that I constantly watch for myself. You know, I'll say, well, you know, this mistake, like I was telling you early on, I messed up my schedule, right? Mm-hmm. And I could tell the individual that I messed up my schedule on, and I had to reschedule something this thing came up or somebody else, blah, blah, blah. Nope, it was 100% me. It was definitely me, you know?
Yeah.
And I found that people react better to that when you say, man, I totally messed up that one, you know, and again, because you're human. Right. And something that it took me a while to understand is that, especially as you grow in a career, entrepreneur and that sort of thing, people look at you differently than you look at yourself. And I guess what I mean by that is like, I'll look in the mirror and I say, hey, this is just Phil Portman. Right. But then they're seeing like, you know, this entrepreneur or something like that. And there's this different level. So sometimes I'll say things and they're received by them different than what I would expect because I'm just Phil Portman. And so I think it was a Tony Robbins quote that was, the meaning of my communication is the response I get. And I started adapting the way that I communicate with people to be asking for feedback constantly in that so I could gain, were they understanding what I was saying, or was it received the correct way? And, and trying to draw some of that feedback, out from them. Along your journey, is that something that you've struggled with at all in the way that people treat you or the people that understand the way you're communicating to them?
It's funny. I've got just a couple of stupid examples. I mean, one was I did stand up for a while. And I enjoyed it. And what I was doing was kind of out there for the time. And I understand that. And like a lot of things, not patting myself on the back, I was ahead of the curve.
Sure.
I mean, house music, I was doing that. I was one of the earliest people to be putting out house music. I like stumbled into a lot of things. Even the antique business took it to a whole different level. I was doing stand up and having dinner with a friend, and this couple came up to me and said, you're the guy. I saw you. You're funny. Tell my girlfriend a joke. And honestly, at that point, I said, I don't want to do stand up anymore.
Yeah.
This is annoying. I thought, oh my God, you recognize. It's not cool to be recognized. Put that aside and then say, okay, so when I decided to go, and I'd written all kinds of things and written plays that have been produced and whatever, and a lot of things that have been a complete disaster, which we don't have enough time to talk about. And when I wrote Selling Dead People's Things, and the damn thing hits, people did start to treat me differently. And I'll give you an example of this week. I'm not in the store all the time, and a woman came down, lovely woman, came down from Milwaukee. She already had her copy of the book in hand, right? And where am I? She wants me to sign her book. And they said, well, he's not here today. And she was not happy. And they said, well, we can give you a copy. We've got a copy here that's signed. No, I want it made out to me. I came all the way from Milwaukee and da, 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 da. And then we're like, oh, this is a customer who's now unhappy. She should have called first. But my staff said something interesting, was that they should, a very smart woman who works for me. And she goes, you don't understand. This happens every once in a while. And she goes, these people want a piece of you and they're disappointed when they don't get it. And I said, what do you mean a piece? They want to hear a story. They want to hear an antecedent. They want to, they want a photo with you, which to me is like ridiculous. But but that's what they want. And so it doesn't mean that they're wrong at all. It's lovely. It's lovely saying Absolutely. That. But I never really thought that through, that would be a part of success. And that it's great that it resonates, but I'm still kind of figuring that out.
Yeah, adapting.
So, if I'm at a book reading or a book signing, absolutely. But it's when you get kind of sideswiped by people.
Yeah,
I'm kind of uncomfortable with that. So, success is a funny thing.
So you find yourself putting on different hats, depending on.
Yeah, I wasn't there that day. What day was? Yeah. I thought I would be more. I think when I was younger, I was so looking forward to that. And I thought, oh, that would be so cool. And now that I'm older, it's just a little annoying.
Yeah.
But
it's still a byproduct of something that you have to do. So just like that tell me a joke person, is that going to change your future projects? You'll do them all under a pseudonym or something like that?
Oh, no, no, no. No. I know. It's the other thing that, again, my employees have told me, what they said, because this book is a memoir, and I get pretty open about lots of things, and the second book is as well. And people feel like they know you. They know you. I've told them personal things. And so and I don't know them at all.
Yeah.
So that's what's odd. And I'll go, I mean, they may ask me a question. I go, how do they know that? Oh, yeah, that's in the book. So putting that out there for anybody that's going to writing a memoir, it does open you up, to that. And, I'm still kind of, It's a learning curve. It's a good thing. I learn stuff every day, so that's good.
Absolutely. And it sounds like you keep challenging yourself, and I'm amazed at just the things that you've accomplished and the things that you've achieved. And I think one of the ways that you do it differently than I've seen a lot of people is you throw your whole self into it, is what it seems like to me. And I feel like that's a component that a lot of people miss. They're like, well, I'll just dabble a little bit. I'll stick my toe in this a little bit. And you seem to embrace it because it's things that you enjoy and you love.
Yeah, you really have to take it seriously. I mean, it's kind of like serious fun. And any kind of creative thing, the fun is in the creation of it. But once it's an actual product, then you have to sell it. And that always isn't so fun. I enjoy doing these podcasts. It's a wonderful way to, I've met so many great people. And a way to get, you know, word out about, you know, my book or my store or whatever. But it's curious how many things have started during the pandemic. I've been on a lot of shows that started during the pandemic of people. It was almost as if, you know, they had all this time to like look inward and then really go, what do I want to do? Could I do this? And I really think that's wonderful. I'm on once or twice a month. I'm on a show out of Vermont, which is called Amber Live, and it's a older drag queen called Amber LeMay, and who's got like quite the following. And I was a guest on her. It's a talk show.
Yeah,
it's a comedy talk show, and I was on as a guest, and it was lovely. It was fun. And a couple weeks later, they asked me to come on again. And I said, you know, I was just on it. It'd be great. Wait a couple months. And a week later, they called me again. And they said, what about being a regular? And I had all kinds of health issues going on. Not a good time at all. I just got out of the hospital. We won't get into it. And I was like, this is interesting. This is interesting. And one reason I wanted to do it was because I just saw the potential in what these people were doing. And because it's Vermont, they have all these people from like celebrities from New York who've been on there. John Fetterman's been on there twice. It's no small deal, really, right? Now I'm an associate producer on the show, wow. And I help book people. And they got Carol Baskin and Charles Bush and just on and on and on. And I've helped bring in just a lot of people. And the last couple of weeks, I mean, they've had TikToks that have hit like 200,000 views.
Wow.
These people have been putting in the work.
Yeah.
And that's why I did it too. And I thought, these people are really doing it. And I'm just going to extend that what you said, when I have the 110% of me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to give it my all for them because they're good people. It's smart. Yeah. It's a cool idea. So, and it gives me another, you know, platform to talk about vintage and be silly.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the other side where things don't always work out, be it adversity or struggles or difficulty. How do you handle those situations where you went into something, you put in the effort, and it didn't work out?
Some things are just out of your control. When I sold the record label, it was really at the height of the AIDS crisis, and pretty much everybody I was working with has since passed. Mm. And I tried to start another label about 86 or 87. I mean, just me and bringing in new people and all that. I couldn't get it off the ground again. Beat myself up about it. And the things, that magic that we had, I just couldn't make it happen again. And that was difficult to walk away from, because I loved it and the music, you know, that we were doing. It was getting more into like techno pop stuff. I just had to accept that, you know, didn't work out. And also, when one writes, I mean, I got a, you know, box of rejections here. You just get rejected all the time when you're submitting things to, you know, to magazines, or the book was turned down by 70 publishers, and I had an agent. in LA. So who, I don't understand, you know. And then finally I said, screw this. I'm just going to put it out myself. Mm-hmm. It's not about, this is the other thing I put out to people, and people go like, if you can make it not about the money, mm-hmm. that is the first thing in your head, right? That it's about the project, about the art, about the passion of it, about why you want to do it, about the, you know, do you love to do this or do you like to do this? Yeah. If you put money in the back of it, you know, the money may come. It actually can. But when it's, you know, sometimes you don't have that luxury. I don't have that luxury. So I've had, you know, businesses where I've just thrown money at things and it just has not clicked. And the antique business started in you could not have started any lower than how we started in the corner of a basement of a store, you know, and to be now, you know, the oldest, largest antique store in Chicago doing, you know, seven figures.
That's incredible.
And we're propping TV shows every week. And that's, we have for decades, you know, we have a whole prop business, just movies and TV shows and theatrical productions and whatever. And that's a whole other thing that just kind of grew organically. And it, because it was like, hey, these are cool people. They get cool things. They're easy to deal with. So I learned about the film people. They want people that are easy to deal with. So, you know, it's, I also bring up this one is, people will probably kill me for saying this, but so my business partner, he's my business partner in the antique business. Mm-hmm. And he'd never had a business before where I've had, I don't know, four or five before. And right from the start, I always put it to make this analogy, you know, he went up to hit the ball and he hit it out of the park the first time.
So that's right? How it is every time, right?
Right. You know, what's been interesting though is, and he's just the best partner you could have, right? Yeah. Honestly, just the best. But he's always afraid. It's always this, like, it's all going to fall. The sky is falling. Oh my God, he's that, right? Because he didn't, if you fall on your face enough times, you go, what happened?
I
pick myself up. Yeah, I dust myself off and you keep going. What's the worst thing? I mean, you know, losing other people's money, that's bad. You can go into that, but really, really. So it just got to be, even now I go and like, I'm just going to try that. What can happen? So there is this, and I think there are other people that get really cocky going like, hey, I did this and blah, 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 right? You learn so much more from your failures and your mistakes. And yeah. I'm not the first person to say that. But it's just so very true. You learn a lot about yourself. My favorite word is resilient. Be resilient. And, you know, there's very little, only thing I found out is like, you know, that's, you know, your health. That can slow you down. I've certainly discovered that. But beyond that, I wasn't happy when I did fall on my face, but now in retrospect, I'm glad I did. I just learned so much.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And two things that you talked about that I think are incredibly important for me in business as well is for me, money has always been kind of a side product of it, right? Like I find something that really interests me. And for me, it's problem solving. So I'm trying to figure out this problem. I'm trying to solve it. And at the time I even had people say, well, you got to make money at it. How are you making money at this?
Right.
We'll worry about that later. You know, we'll worry about that later. Let's solve this problem first, you know? And that's something that people have difficulty understanding. And then the other part that you talked about was 70 different publishers. And for the listeners, I would ask you, how many denials would you get before you said, you know what, I'm not a writer. This book is no good. You know, I'm not an author, you know.
And let me tell you, too, I had a book. You know, now everybody writes children's books. It's like a big thing. But back in, I don't know, 82, 83, I wrote a kid's book and came crazy close to getting it published. Flown out to New York, meet with the publishers. The whole board is there. La, la, la. It was just like, it was in the Flatiron building. I forget wow. which publisher it was, but it was the Flatiron building. I came out of there like, this is it. Yeah. I want to do this, and I want to write, and I want to move to New York. Da, 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 da. And then they changed their mind. Mm-hmm. And I threw that in a box, and it's still sitting there in a box. I never even tried to do anything with it again, which was stupid. Totally stupid, right? But as future projects would come up, like this one, 40 some years later, I was like going, I'm not gonna do that again. Also, when I say I got rejections, I had some lovely rejections. There was a publisher in Canada that said, somebody is gonna publish this. This is so cool. It's unusual because it's a memoir, but between each chapter, I take you out of estate sales and I take you to different real people and real things and real places and real parts of Chicago history and all that. So it's woven in. I didn't realize it, but kind of Devil in the White City. He's got that kind of theme. If you can pull that off, it's interesting for the readers. And I didn't think, I started out going, well, is this a business book? Am I writing a business book, or am I writing about the sales that I've been at? And then I go, well, let's see if we could weave these two together, which turned out to be something very different. And I just totally stumbled into it because I always say on people talk about Antique Roadshow, they love hearing the backstory of things. That's what this book is. So it's not a book about money. It's not a book about value, which is unusual for, again, the antique business, because it's what's this worth?
Yeah, that's what everyone wants to know. Well, Dwayne, we've learned so much from you. Thank you for everything. For our listeners that want to follow you, what do you got going on? Tell them all what you got going on.
Sure. You can find my two books, Selling Dead People's Things and Vintage Confidential. Just add .com to either one of those, and it'll take you to a website. They're both on Amazon. Selling Dead People's Things is now an audiobook. Did that during the pandemic shutdown. No rest for the wicked.
Did you record it, or did you hire?
I did. Yeah. I have some just fantastic blurbs from celebrities. That's what the agent was good for. Something good came of that. She said, "You need to get celebrity blurbs." I have these celebrity blurbs. And you can find me on Instagram at Vintage Confidential, Facebook, and TikTok now, which is really fun, at Dwayne Scott Cerny.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dwayne, and thank you for listening to the Successes podcast. We'll see you next week.